talking. We're going talking today where things are popping. The Marian way, we're going to drop in on discussions of the day on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, we're going debating. We're going to debate very loud and we'll be laughing and floating high on a cloud. Phones are ringing from listeners all around on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club. And we'll guess and goof and talk on exchange, read, debate, and think it's exchange. Tune in, we're on. Turn on, I'm in. It's on today, the Exchange Club.
Hey, we're back here on a Getaway Friday, Cinco de Mayo, Friday, May the 5th, 2023, 14 minutes past the hour, and we've got a whole hour left. Don't forget, we will be on tonight, Friday Night Live, 8:15 until 10 p.m. on this station, and Carolyn was the winner last hour of the Del Taco $10 gift card and the Del Taco beanie, and you can pick that up until 1 o'clock today. Now, this hour, we are going to be giving away a large one-topping pizza to Neighbor's Pizza. Now, we're going to start all over with the Harding trivia here. Now, the question that remains, what was President Harding's favorite food that Florence cooked for him? Now, it's a breakfast food. That's the hint. What very popular breakfast food. People still eat it to this day. It's also a famous recipe that Mary Ellen Withrow has given on this station. Her version of these things. What is that food that Florence Harding prepared for President Harding that was one of his favorites? 740-383-9944. Remember, it is a breakfast food, and primarily a breakfast food. People have it for breakfast, and you can possibly win a Neighbor's Pizza one topping here today. Now, the other question I wanted to give you, and we kind of gave this away earlier on, but we're going to throw it out there again, is President Harding was, well, hey, maybe somebody's got the answer here right off the bat. Let's take the phone call. Go ahead, caller.
Well, I think I know the answer, Scott, but since my entry is just for fun, how about Harding boiled eggs?
Not boiled eggs, but that's
Harding boiled, of course.
No, not Harding. Do you have a question for the president?
Not really, but it's nice to have him on. I guess I'm in a time warp, but that's okay. He's always a gracious guest. Can you get your friend up there in presidential heaven, Richard, as Archie Bunker says, Richard E. Nixon? I'd love to hear from him. I can imitate him a little, but I'd love to get the real one because he was a fascinating guy.
Well, you never know. Maybe we'll see Richard Nixon on the station one day.
Yes.
Or you'll hear Richard Nixon.
One of the most colorful presidents. Okay, well, good show so far. Stay warm out there.
No boiled eggs. Bye-bye. Okay, it's not boiled eggs. I don't know that boiled eggs are primarily a breakfast food. President Harding, you think primarily a breakfast food?
No, you can eat boiled eggs any time of day.
Now, this food, would you say it's primarily a breakfast food?
Well, I think it has its roots in being a breakfast food, but today, it's something that shows up on the menu any time of day, sometimes with chicken.
A dessert? It's a dessert sometimes? Go ahead, caller.
Chip tam gravy over on waffles.
No, not chip tam gravy over. Oh, is it? Well, no, that would not be it.
Okay.
Well, now let's think here for a second. I got to go back and think. Chip tam gravy over waffles. What do you think, President Harding? Give me a ruling on this one.
Well, that's partially correct.
Partially correct. Primarily a breakfast food. What was President Harding's favorite dish made by Florence Harding? A breakfast food. Now, that is close, what we just heard, but not the answer. 740-383-9944. Was Florence much of a cook? She played the piano.
Yeah, well, Florence was... She was passable as a cook. She's not well known for fine cuisine. Florence did enjoy entertaining, and she'd lay out sumptuous buffets of appetizers and beverages, and Florence was a meat and potatoes cook.
Go ahead, caller.
Well, I've always heard he liked tea. They had their own teapot. Did they have a morning cup of tea?
Tea? No, tea is not the answer. Are you enjoying President Harding this morning?
I do have a question for him.
Go right ahead.
He kind of touched on the Black Fox scandal and everything, and did the president ever think about taking over the operations of baseball as a, you know, as a federally run enterprise? I know he was a big baseball fan there.
Well, that's true. Harding Harding was a great baseball fan. And a lot of his baseball associations are little known. You don't hear much about these things. But I played baseball in the farm fields as a child, so that endeared me to the sport. When we moved to Marion when I was 17 years old, I befriended Bob Allen, who went on to play seven seasons in the majors. From 1907 through 1911, I actually owned an interest in a baseball team. It was the Marion Diggers, which was a Class D Ohio State League team. Of course, I told you all about the Chicago Cubs coming to town. And when that happened, nearly 5,000 fans filled the grandstand and surrounded the field at 50 cents a ticket. I pitched in that game. I took the mound for the Kerrigan Taylors and threw three pitches to Max Flack to open the action. The actual game followed with the Taylors, reinforced by the addition of catcher Tom Daly and pitchers Speed Martin and Sweetbread Bailey from the Cubs. The enthusiastic crowd supported both squads during the game, which was won by the Cubs 3-1, as you'd probably expect. After the election, I was in April of 1921. I was in my box for the opening of the 1921 season as the Senators faced the Boston Red Sox. I threw out the first ceremonial pitch to Walter Johnson. He then settled back to enjoy the action in the company of my wife and Attorney General Harry Daugherty, and Herbert Hoover was then at that point Secretary of Commerce. So I expressed my love for baseball on many occasions.
Does that answer the question?
Yeah, good to hear from you.
All right, thanks, caller. Bye-bye. All right, phone lines are still open here. We're going to give away a large Neighbor's Pizza, one topping at the bottom of this hour. The question is, what was President Harding's favorite food cooked by his wife, Florence Harding? Now, it is primarily a breakfast food. 740-383-9944, and again, you will get a large Neighbor's Pizza, one topping at the bottom of this hour. Now, the other question I was going to ask was, we touched on it earlier, but who did President Harding defeat in the election of 1920? So if you've been listening all morning, you might know the answer to that. All I need is the last name. I don't need the first name. What person did President Harding defeat in the election of 1920 to become President of the United States? And this person was also an Ohio person. 740-383-9944, large Neighbor's Pizza on the line for either one of those particular answers. And last hour, the winner was Carolyn of the Del Taco $10 gift card, and we've also got Ryan's $10 gift card if he'd like to stop and get that before 1 o'clock. All right, President Harding, let's get another speech in here.
Well, let's see. I have a Lincoln Memorial dedication speech, which is, I think, one of my stronger speeches.
Let's take this call, and then we'll get into that. That sounds good. Go ahead, caller.
How about chipped beef gravy over waffles?
Chipped beef gravy over waffles. No? President's shaking his head no. Thank you. Now, where are we going wrong here? We've had a lot of gravy and a lot of waffles, President Harding. Where are we going wrong here?
Well, we're going wrong by combining things.
Well, and we're getting another call here. Go ahead, caller. Go ahead.
Cox.
What's that?
The name Cox, Mr.
Oh, Cox. Absolutely. That is the answer. Is this Carolyn again?
It is.
We got you, Carolyn. Thank you for being out there and listening.
Uh-huh.
All right. Carolyn's in again. So the Cox was who President Harding faced in the 1920 election, but the food issue here is we're combining food. We have heard the answer, right? We're just combining it with something that was not... Have you ever heard this combined for your... No, I don't know where that's coming from. So it's just one of the items that we're hearing. It's not both items that was his favorite. 740-383-9944. So that should clear it up, and hopefully we'll get that answer before we go into the speech here from President Harding. Again, 740-383-9944, and this is for the Large Neighbor's Pizza one topping. What was President Harding's favorite food prepared by Florence Harding, primarily a breakfast food? 740-383-9944. And here's another quick one for you, because we want to get as many people in as possible before 1 o'clock today. What was President Harding's father's profession? What was President Harding's father's profession? 740-383-9944. Okay, President Harding, the speech choice we have the Lincoln Memorial dedication.
Okay.
We Tomb have, of the Unknown Soldier.
And also the 50-year semi-centennial anniversary of Birmingham.
That's
an interesting speech. I think we
Yes, that's important. Now tell people the situation of the time, the year, and why this is so significant.
Well, we're talking about the 50-year semi-centennial anniversary of Birmingham. It's the 50th anniversary of the founding of Birmingham. Understanding the background of the Civil War, leading up to that, and we've got a city, a large city in the South, that is known for difficulties in race relations, and the Civil War has not helped that in any way. And I've been invited to speak to the citizens of Birmingham to celebrate the 50-year semi-centennial. So, as president, how can I acknowledge the injustices of the Civil War at the same time as I'm celebrating the history of the city? That's a difficult dichotomy. So I tried to address it head on in a speech, which I have before me now. Is that the one we want to do?
I definitely think so. I think it's got such significance, that particular speech.
Okay. So here we are, standing on the steps of the courthouse, and a large audience of people gathered below on the steps and in the yard. I don't have a sound system, so I have to bellow. So here we go. Citizens of Birmingham and people of the South, we've come here to pay tribute to the marvelous achievement of a brief half-century to which this city and its industries stand as a monument. They testify to us how far the South has progressed in a single generation, the generation since slavery was abolished and the rule of free labor and unfettered industrial opportunity became the rule of all of our General Republic. We are gathered today to celebrate the semi-centenary of the founding of Birmingham. That this wonder could be wrought in so brief a time tells us how fast our modern world moves. So fast that we are tempted to forget our yesterdays before our todays are fairly begun. Yet, there was never a time when we needed so much to study our past, and in light of its lessons, to give earnest thought to our tomorrows. So I have thought that here in Birmingham, it may be proper to suggest a few thoughts regarding the critical times which are faced by this country. If the Civil War marked a turning point in our relationships between the races, the World War brought us to full recognition that the race problem is national rather than merely regional. There are no reliable statistics, but it's common knowledge that the World War was marked by a great migration of colored people to the North and to the West. They were attracted by the demand for labor and the higher wages offered. This has brought the conflicts of race much closer. The racial massacre in Tulsa, Oklahoma this month is the worst spectacle of racial violence in this country's history. Fire razed 36 square blocks of the prosperous colored Greenwood neighborhood. It burned more than 3,000 homes, killed as many as 300 people, buried in mass graves, or simply tossed into the Arkansas River. God grant that in the justice and fairness of this country, we shall never again see this kind of spectacle. And while I've directed the Justice Department to investigate this travesty and to bring its perpetrators to justice, there is much to be said about racial conflict in this nation. One of the great difficulties of popular government is that citizenship expects the government to do what it ought to do for itself. No government can wave a magic wand and eliminate racial issues. The colored race, to come into its own, must do the great work itself, while the government's responsibility is to offer the opportunity. But the Tulsa disaster underscores the difficulties of a community in which two greatly differing races are brought to live side by side. We must seek a larger charity on both sides, a beginning of better understanding. And in the light of that better understanding, perhaps we shall be able to consider this problem together as a nation, as a problem of all sections and of both races, in whose solution the best intelligence of both must be enlisted. We must realize that our race problem here in the United States is only a piece of a race issue that the whole world confronts. Surely we shall gain nothing by blinking away the facts, by refusing to give thought to them. That's not the American way of approaching such issues. In one way, the World War worsened the elements of this problem. Thousands of black men serving their country just as patriotically as did the white men were transported overseas, and they experienced the life of countries where their color aroused far less antagonism than it does here. That's why so many wish to continue to live there. A black soldier told me that the war brought his race the first real conception of citizenship, the first realization that the flag was their flag, to fight for, to be protected by them, and also to protect them. He was sure that the opportunity to learn what patriotism meant was a real opportunity to his race. These things lead us to hope that we shall find an adjustment of relations between the two races, in which both can enjoy full citizenship, the full measure of usefulness to the country, of opportunity for themselves, and in which recognition and reward shall at last be distributed in fairly and in proportion, regardless of race or color. Here, then, is the true conception of the interrelation of color: complete uniformity in ideals, absolute equality in the paths of knowledge and culture, equal opportunity for those who strive, equal admiration for those who achieve, respect for each other's inherited traditions. When I suggest the possibility of economic equality between the races, I mean it in precisely the same way and to the same extent I spoke of economic equality between the members of the same race. In each case, I would mean equality proportioned to the honest capacities of the individual. Take first the political aspect. I would say let the black man vote when he is fit to vote. Prohibit the white man voting when he is unfit to vote. On the other hand, I would insist upon equal educational opportunity for both. There must be such education among the colored people as will enable them to develop their own leaders, leaders who will inspire the race with proper ideals of race pride, of national pride, of an honorable destiny, and important participation in the universal effort for the advancement of humanity as a whole. partnership of the races in developing the highest aims of all humanity must be if humanity, not only here but everywhere, is to achieve the ends for which we have set for it. I can say to you people of the South, both black and white, that the time has passed when you are entitled to assume that this problem of races is peculiarly and particularly your problem. More and more it's becoming a problem of the North. And more it's the problem of Africa, of South America, of the Pacific, of the South Seas, of the world. It is the problem of democracy everywhere, if we mean what we say about all men being created equal. Coming as Americans do from many origins of race, tradition, language, color, heredity, engaged as we are in the huge effort to work an honorable national destiny from so many different elements, the one thing we must carefully avoid is the development of separate classes in this country. I would assert that a black man cannot be a white man, and that he does not need to be and should not aspire as much to be a white man as possible to accomplish the best that's possible for him. He should seek to be, and he should be encouraged to be, the best possible black man, and not the best possible imitation of a white man. I want to see the time come when black men will regard themselves as full participants in the benefits and duties of American citizenship. We cannot go on as we have gone for more than half a century with one great section of our population numbering as many people as the entire population of significant countries of Europe, somehow set apart from real contribution to solving our national issues because of a division on race lines. Every consideration, it seems to me, brings us back at last to the question of education. When I speak of education as part of this race question, I would like to see an education that would fit every man not only to do his particular work as well as possible, but to rise to a higher plane if he is capable. For that sort of education, I have no fears whether it be given to a black man or a white man. From that sort of education, I believe black men, white men, the entire nation would draw immeasurable benefit. I want us all to get out, put on blue denims, roll up our sleeves, let our hands be honorably soiled, and let's do the work. That's what we've got to do, and we should be glad that we can. It's not possible then. Is it not possible then? In that long era of readjustment upon which you're entering for a nation, to lay aside old prejudices, old antagonisms, and in the broad, clear light of nationalism, enter upon a constructive policy in dealing with these intricate issues. If we are fair, if we are honest in administering justice, if we are alive to perils in front of us, and if we meet them in conscience and in courage, the achievement of this nation in our last 145 years will be magnified tenfold in the next, and the glory of our country will be reflected in the happiness of a great people, greater than we can possibly dream, grander for understanding, and the courage to be right.
And what year again was that, President Harding?
This was 1921.
In Birmingham, Alabama, 1921, really, in Birmingham, Alabama at this point, black men do not have the right to vote. Women have just gotten the right to vote. Certainly, black women are not voting in Birmingham, Alabama. This is a Republican president going down there making that speech. Why? Why did you make that speech? That certainly couldn't have gone over well in any way, and you need to be reelected next year.
Well, it boiled down to honesty. It boiled down to integrity, ethics, harking back to the Marian Star Creed. I can tell you that went over. That speech went over not only in Birmingham, but throughout my own party, like a lead balloon. It went over with a resounding thud, because as you look at Republican ideals in 1921, this was out of sync with what the Republican Party line was saying at that time.
Now, remember, so far, it's 38 minutes past the hour. We have got one person in line to win a large Neighbor's Pizza, one topping here. Carolyn, so far, is the only person in, but we're going to do the drawing here in about 20 minutes. Two questions are out there right now. You can get in on this drawing, a large one-topping Neighbor's Pizza. Two questions. Number one, what was President Harding's favorite food prepared by Florence Harding? Now, it's primarily a breakfast food. Now, we have had it guessed twice so far, but we've had it guessed in combination with something else, not on its own. What is President Harding's favorite food prepared by his wife, Florence Harding? It is primarily a breakfast food. The other question we have floating around right now, what was the profession of President Harding's father? What did his father do for a job? I believe we did mention that earlier. What did President Harding's father do for a job? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. If you have an answer to either one of those questions, give us a buzz. We're going to be giving away a large Neighbor's Pizza here in about 20 minutes, one topping that you can eat tonight from your home. 740-383-9944. Favorite food prepared by Florence Harding for President Harding, and maybe this is one of the answers coming our way. Go ahead, caller.
Father was a doctor.
Father was a doctor. You have got it. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Father was a doctor. So we've got father was a doctor, but we still don't have the food. The favorite food prepared by Florence Harding for President Harding, primarily a breakfast food. We've had it. It's been brought up here, but with another food. We just need the food on its own. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. And here's another easy one for you to get somebody in the competition here. What year was President Harding inaugurated? Now, we did the year he was elected, 1920. What year was he inaugurated? 740-383-9944. What kind of an event was your inauguration in March of that particular year, President Harding?
Well,
let's take the call and we're going to come to this inauguration here. Go ahead, caller.
Was it just waffles?
Just waffles, that's right. President Harding, what did you like about Florence's waffles?
Well, Florence's waffles are made with egg whites. That sets it apart. What that makes is a waffle that's light and airy, and you can eat a lot of them. In fact, I joked with Florence that if you're going to have a stack of waffles, you have to weigh them down with a rock to keep them from flying off the plate. I love those. I'll sit down to a plate of seven waffles, just plain waffles, nothing on them, and I'll have seven of those. And once I'm done with those, then the next seven waffles, I'll put some butter on, and then the next seven waffles, I'll put on some maple syrup. So 20 or so waffles, I'm at my capacity.
Not too bad. Hey, thank you, caller.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. A large Neighbor's Pizza going to be given away here in about 18 minutes. One topping. So far, we've got Carolyn and Judy in the competition today. And the other question still out there. We finally got the waffle question. The other question, what year was President Harding inaugurated as President of the United States? What year? All we need is the year. He was elected in 1920. What year was he inaugurated? 740-383-9944. Tell us about Inauguration Day.
Well, Inauguration Day in the United States is a celebration of the inauguration, the inauguration of the president, which is a cause of a major celebration. So there's always a large crowd. There's always an inaugural ball, a sumptuous dinner, music, women in gowns, dancing, and, you know, to me, that's a lot of expense. I campaigned on responsible government. And I don't think it's responsible for the government to throw lavish parties for its own. So I canceled the inaugural ball. Now, that didn't endear me to Florence because she had just bought a beautiful green taffeta dress just for that occasion. And honestly, I don't think Florence ever forgave me for that. But I couldn't see spending that kind of money on a ball when we could just as easily have a modest party with some cupcakes. But it still was a significant occasion. We made the inaugural speech, and the swearing-in was on the east steps of the Capitol building. Thousands of people gathered on the steps and in the grounds surrounding the Capitol. And what was one thing that was noteworthy is this is the first time an inaugural speech has been given with a sound amplification system. The Bell Telephone Company, their engineers, had developed an amplification system using a microphone, an amplifier, and big speakers. There was a truck full of amplifiers with vacuum tubes on them, but it gave me the opportunity to project my voice to thousands without straining. And I had been used to giving speeches to large groups without any amplification for some time. Anybody who had done much oratory was skilled in being able to project your voice and be heard. But this was the first time everybody could hear clearly. I didn't have to strain. And the inauguration was on March 4th, 1921, and I used the Bible that was used to swear in George Washington.
Hmm. Why is that?
Well, it just seemed appropriate. The first Bible used to inaugurate an American president, what better precedent is there for that than to use the very same Bible for the 29th presidency?
We had a call coming in there. If that was you, call back. The neighbor's pizza hangs in the balance here for about 12 more minutes. What year was President Harding inaugurated? And one more quick question to get in here today. What was Florence Harding's maiden name? What was Florence Harding's maiden name? We've brought it up. It's a famous name here in Marion. What was Florence Harding's maiden name? If you have the answer to either one of those questions, give us a buzz, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. What was Florence Harding's maiden name? What year was President Harding inaugurated? Those are the questions. Go ahead, caller.
Let's say 1921.
1920. Absolutely. Inaugurated. We just heard it. March the 5th, 1921. Thank you, caller.
Mm-hmm.
All right, 1921. What was Florence Harding's maiden name? 47 minutes past the hour. We've got Carolyn and Judy in the competition here to win the neighbor's pizza. One large, one-topping pizza. We're going to draw in about 12 minutes. What was Florence Harding's maiden name? 740-383-9944. President Harding, what are some interesting facts about you that people might not know?
Well, there are a number of firsts. I was the first president to do any number of things. Not necessarily of my own doing, but they're first nonetheless. We were just talking about the inauguration. I was the first president to ride to and from the inauguration in an automobile. Horse and carriage was the order of the day. I broke that tradition by riding the inauguration in a black Packard Twin 6 convertible. As I mentioned with the speech, I was the first president to use sound amplification so the crowd could hear the speech. I was the first Baptist president, member of Trinity Baptist here in Marion. I was the first journalist to become president of the United States. Now, what's interesting about this is that my opponent, James Cox, was also a journalist. He was the owner and editor of the Dayton newspaper. So imagine a newspaper editor from Marion running against a newspaper editor from Dayton, both from Ohio. What are the chances of that?
How did that happen?
Well, I would think that being a newspaper editor is good preparation for anybody running for any kind of public office. You need to be literate. You need to be curious. You need to have good, reasonable judgment. Just the profession itself migrates over into politics almost seamlessly. But it is a striking coincidence that these two journalists would run together for the presidency.
Especially since you never had a journalist as president, and you were going to get one either way you went here.
Either way, it was going to be.
And what are the odds they'd both be from Ohio
right.
in the same year?
Right. So, among other firsts, I was the first sitting U.S. senator to be elected president. That had never happened before. I had been senator for two terms. I thoroughly enjoyed doing that. I thought that was a position that probably I was born to do. But no president had gone from senator to president. Now, since then, that's been a common path for people to be elected president, but it wasn't at that time. I was the first president elected after women earned the right to vote, after the passage of the 19th Amendment. And I was the first to call off the inaugural ball. I didn't want a spectacle for the inauguration. I'm not the type of guy who desired the hype that surrounded the event. I didn't want a salute from naval guns. I didn't want a military or civilian procession. No inaugural ball. I just wanted a simple ceremony and one that would highlight the peaceful transfer of power that the office of the presidency carries with it.
Again, the trivia question, going to draw for a large neighbor's pizza, one topping here in about 7 minutes. What was Florence Harding's maiden name? Florence Harding's maiden name. Does anybody know that? You can get in the competition with Carolyn and Judy here, 740-383-9944, if you can give me that answer in the next 7 minutes. 740-383-9944, what was Florence Harding's maiden name? And I think we did mention it earlier. Now, there's a lot of talk that you and Florence Harding's father did not get along. How did that relationship evolve?
Well, Florence's father was a very stubborn, very hard-headed man, fixed in his opinions. There were rumors that, and these were just rumors, that if you traced my ancestry, you would find black blood, African American blood in my ancestry, among my great great grandparents and so forth. That was a rumor that was started by the neighbor kids when I was growing up in Blooming Grove. Some neighbor kids had been raiding my dad's hen house. They got caught and severely punished. But then they started spreading these rumors around Blooming Grove that Harding has got black in his blood. And of course, at this time in the late 1800s, this was a scandalous type of accusation to make of a white person. So there's absolutely no truth to it. My genealogy has been widely published, and we know where my ancestors came from the time they left Switzerland and first set foot in the United States. So, but it's a rumor that carried through my campaign. And it's a rumor that Florence's father adopted as truth. So he called me names behind my back. You know the kind of names I'm talking about. Or if he'd pass on the street, he'd whisper a name to me within my earshot. Amos was you know, a wealthy man. I came from very modest circumstances. I was doing better as a newspaper editor, but I certainly was not a wealthy man. And it seemed to Amos that Florence would be marrying down if she married Warren Harding. So we had words.
You and Florence's father. Hold on, let's see. Go ahead, caller.
Florence would be marrying down.
Her name was King.
Not King, but you're close. Florence's maiden name. What was Florence Harding's maiden name? 740-383-9944. We've got about 5 minutes till we're going to draw for that large one-topping neighbor's pizza. It's not King, but what was Florence Harding's maiden name? 740-383-9944. So you had words with Florence's father.
Well, there was one time that I mentioned that he'd if we were passing on the street, he'd whisper a name behind my back, knowing full well that I'd hear it. And I called him on it. We were in downtown Marion. I grabbed him by the throat and slammed him up against a storefront and said, "You do that one more time, I'm going to beat the tar out of you, little man."
Those family get-togethers must have been fun after that.
Well, he eventually came around.
Yeah, I bet he would.
Once you're elected president of the United States, that has a way of changing
your
father-in-law's opinion.
Yeah, sabs a lot of wounds. Go ahead, caller.
I thought it was King, too. It's not Kling, is it?
Kling.
K-L-I-N-G.
Yes, Kling, not King. But you.
Well, how did I know that? Now, I have a question.
Well, he's here. Go ahead.
Did her parents and the Brown family, I think the Wyandotte Popcorn, did they build that real nice place there on Mount Vernon together?
Yes. The Warren...
It's a church.
Warren, Warren built the house on Mount Vernon as a gift to Florence, and they were married at the foot of the steps inside, right there at the newel post. Warren Harding hired Jacob Apt to be the architect and the builder of the house. Now, you may not recognize the name, but you might recognize some of the things that he built in town, including St. Mary's Church.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Very nice. Well, hey, thank you for the question.
Uh-huh.
All right, a quick question here. We've only got about 4 minutes left before we draw for the one-topping neighbor's pizza here. Let's see. What is a quick question? Okay, what year... plug your ears, President Harding, on this one. What year did President Harding die? What year did President Harding die?
What?
I know. I know. What's the psychic?
Madam Marcia.
Madam Marcia. Oh, my goodness. You know, keep an eye on her. Is she still around? No, she's not around anymore. Pay attention. What year did President Harding die? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Just need the year. 3 minutes left. You know, President Harding, you look back on this. Your own father is still alive here in 1923. How's he taken this all in? This sort of, not wealthy doctor. How's he making it around with his son, President of the United States?
Well, he's doing well with it. He had more difficulty with me marrying Florence.
Oh, really? What was that about?
Well, he was... Now, this was somewhat scandalous. I mean, I understand that Florence had been married and divorced before. She married Pete DeWolf, who was an alcoholic, and couldn't sustain the marriage. The marriage crumbled, but not until a son was born, Marshall DeWolf. So here's a single mother, divorced, and divorce in the late 1800s was a scandalous thing. And the other issue is that Florence is 5 years older than I am. So my father didn't think that any of that was a good idea. I mean, he didn't dislike Florence. He just didn't care for the situation that she was divorced and had a child that ultimately I'd be responsible for, and was 5 years my senior. They got along fine, but that was an issue. He would rather I had married somebody else.
I can imagine so. Hey, go ahead, caller.
1923.
You got it. You're in the drawing. Thank you. All right, we're going to draw for that neighbor's pizza in about 1 minute here, so stay tuned. We've got about six entrants, so it's going to be... oh, by the way, you don't have to come in here to get the neighbor's pizza. We're just going to get your name, and we'll send that over to neighbor's pizza, and you can call them tonight, give them your name, and you will get that large one-topping pizza. President Harding, as we sit here in 1923, what do you have coming up? What's most important for you as we head into the summer of 1923?
Well, I've got a number of initiatives that are near and dear to my heart. I have started on the establishment of a Veterans Bureau, and I have named someone in charge of that. It's a cabinet-level position, and the purpose is to build clinics and hospitals and specialty medical practices to care for injured veterans, some of whom have come back from the Great War with the types of injuries that nobody had ever seen before, much less knew how to treat, like mustard gas burns and so forth. Many of these veterans have had nowhere to go. We think that a grateful nation should care for returning veterans, and the Veterans Administration is doing that now. We have hospitals and clinics that are under construction right now, physicians being hired, some specially trained. Another initiative is the forming of an aviation administration. You understand if... air travel is becoming a thing in the United States, but there are no qualifications. If you want to fly a plane, you just hop in the cockpit and take off. There are no formal training requirements. There are no licensing requirements. Anybody can build an airport anywhere they want, call it whatever they want. There's no regulation, no oversight. And it's this industry is way past the point that it needs federal oversight to provide safety standards and licensing standards and training standards and airport standards, and to make it not just a hobby, but make it a real piece of commercial transportation. We're in the process of forming an aviation administration to do just that, and that work will carry on.
Sounds like a busy summer. President Harding, thank you so much for being here. The winner of the neighbor's pizza is Judy Summers. Judy, you're the winner of the pizza. All you got to do is call them during business hours. They will have your name. You can get that one large, one-topping pizza from Neighbor's Pizza. Judy, you're the winner. President Harding, it's always a pleasure when you come in. I hope you've enjoyed yourself these 3 hours and help pep up our Cinco de Mayo.
The time has just flown by. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. We'll be back tonight with Friday Night Live, 8:15 to 10 p.m. For now, Scott Spears with President Harding heading for the dugout.
To play.
You know, Pat, that almost describes our current political situation in this country.
Yes. Doesn't it just? I never thought of that, but you could.